They'll just have another one.
I want to get out of here. Don't you?
Not that much.
So you like it here?
It's not that bad.
You're in a foxhole with a war raging outside.
I know. That's why I'm sure glad I've got my WBAI.
Be glad you've got your WBAI. Become a member online at WBAI.org. Now, do it now.
FM, WBAI, New York.
Hello, this is radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
I'm fairly certain that it's around 5 a.m. and you're listening to All Winter is Almost Half Over Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Well, good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about things this morning, and you can find out a little bit more about that stuff by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. And when you get there, you'll see a blue navigation frame on the left side of your screen. At the top, it will say latest back of the book program links. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 164th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be able to reference them on this program. A recorded program can't be as up-to-date as a live program. This is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story of the past fortnight in several different alternate universes is: we have rocketed up to the tremendous total of 125 followers on Twitter, or X, or whatever it's called now. I think this is the highest total we've ever had, maybe. I know that we've hit 125 before. I'm not sure if we ever hit 126. I don't know. But hey, tons of people, wowee, everybody in various different worlds is impressed. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, February 14th, 2024 at 7 p.m. That meeting will be held on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has a website, and their website says that the death toll in America from COVID-19 was 1,174,626 recently. That's their most recent thing. And that means 4,960 people have died from COVID-19 since our last program 2 weeks ago. So the weekly death rate is 2,480, which is slightly higher than the previous weekly death rate. It's winter, and infectious diseases usually spread more rapidly and efficiently at this time. The fact that some people are oblivious to COVID-19 because they think that the pandemic is over is probably also contributing to that death rate. The pandemic is clearly not over. Pickles of the North and I are still keeping our masks on. We've gotten our new shots. We don't want to get this disease.
Now, Arpal, I was looking at the World Health Organization's website on statistics, and as of January 21st, 2024, the total world cases of COVID-19 reported to the WHO, those are the reported ones, not the ones that go unreported, from the beginning of the pandemic to January 21st, was 774,395,593. Those are cases since the beginning of the pandemic, and the worldwide deaths reported for all of the pandemic, 7,023,271.
Wow.
So those are...
It's still a very serious pandemic.
Yeah.
7 million people are dead. Obviously a lot more than 7 million.
Yes.
They're counting 7 million dead from this thing. And I don't know, the 1918 flu pandemic was bigger, but, you know, this is still a very major thing to have 7 million people die of this one disease like that. Ugh. Well, Donnie Bonespur Trump continues to successfully get himself into the news a whole lot. Yeah, he should be heading for his New York State criminal trial soon. This one's over the cooking of his books to cover up the hush money payments to porn star Stormy Daniels before the, what was it, the 2016 election, which he should never have won. And I don't think you can play games with a criminal court case that you can with a civil case. We know that throughout his civil case, he was doing things, and he would say, yeah, I won't do this. It's sort of like Froggy the Magic Gremlin and Andy Devine. This is a late 1940s kids TV show that if you look at it now, you can see, wow, they did that? Because first of all, it was extremely minimal. It has Andy Devine up in a stage, and then it has film of a theater that has a lot of kids in it. And what would happen is, and they had laugh tracks from these kids. And now and again, they would cut away from the actor, from Andy Devine and the stage, to the shot of the kids in the audience. It was always the same. It was always this one kid that would run from the front row, run over to the aisle, and run up the aisle. And they would run that one like twice or three times per show, and they had only two or three action shots of this crowd of kids. This crowd of kids might have been from the 30s or something. Who knows? Anyway, they would have Andy Devine, and he would be there. I think there was a top hat or something like that. It was a table in any event, and there was Froggy the Magic Gremlin. And I was a very little kid. And, oh boy, I don't know, I think Froggy the Magic Gremlin might have influenced my life a whole lot. But Andy Devine would stand up there and he'd say, oh, I don't know if we should bring Froggy on yet. Of course, they're going to bring Froggy on. I don't know if we're going to bring Froggy on yet. And I think Froggy's voice, his disembodied voice would say, bring me on, or something. And he'd say, are you good? Are you good? I'll be good this time. I'll be good. I will. I will. And so Andy Devine would utter the magic words, plonk your magic twanger, Froggy. And it would be a boing sound, and it would be a little fireworks thing. And there would appear Froggy the Magic Gremlin, who was a frog who was dressed in a vest and jacket and wore gloves. And he'd be, hiya, kids, hiya, hiya. That's what he used to do. That's how Froggy used to show up every time. And then he would clearly misbehave. And, you know, Andy Devine's character never learned. And he Froggy the Magic Gremlin would do awful things to him and spark him to violence, and he would go to strangle Froggy, and then it would be another puff of smoke, and Froggy would disappear. So this is sort of like what Trump has been doing in these civil court cases. You know, I'll be good, I will. And then he misbehaves. And it's, okay, you can give your closing argument, but you can't do X, Y, Z. You can't call people names. You can't deny what you did. You can't denigrate the court, the people who work for the court. There's a long list. We all know the list. And so Trump says, oh, yeah, I agree to that. And then he says, okay. Judge says, okay, go ahead. And Trump just goes and insults the court, attacks the workers, denies what he does, everything he said he wouldn't do. And at most what happens is they fine him like $15,000, which is not a big deal for Trump. He can afford that. And so it's been very frustrating to watch him get away with this crap. I think the judge in the second civil case should have said, no, you have a track record of not behaving, and so to hell with it. You're not talking here. And he should have done that. He didn't. However, we have a criminal trial coming up. I don't think you can play the same games. Now, I am not a lawyer, and so I wonder, can you just not bother to show up for a criminal case? He's not shown up a lot for the civil cases. He comes in when he feels like making a statement. Largely, he doesn't bother to show up, and you can do that in a criminal civil case. In a criminal case, I don't know. I've always seen where the accused has to be in court. Also, court disruptions of the sort that Trump has become infamous for over the years could get him contempt of court citations that wouldn't just cost him money, but might also get him some jail time. That is one of the risks you take when you disrupt a court proceeding in a criminal trial. If he disrupts and a judge finds him in contempt of court, would the judge have the guts to treat that maniac the same as other people found in contempt of court are treated? Would Trump be sent off to jail for a little while? For instance, if you do something disruptive or you start calling the judge and his people names and just say, well, I agree to X, and then you don't follow through on that. If you say, I won't say this, but I want to make a statement, I won't say that. And then you go on and you say what you said you wouldn't say. That is contempt of court, and gee whiz, people get jail time for that. It's not big. It's, you know, frequently, well, they start out with fines, but frequently you can get 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours. Sometimes it can be a week in jail. As far as I know, a judge can sentence somebody for contempt of court for up to 90 days in jail. It's rare that anybody gets 90 days for contempt of court, but it happens. So I don't know. I don't know how that would work with Trump. I suspect that Trump will be disruptive at his criminal case and will be clearly in contempt of court. Will Trump be sent to a cell with the SS detail? I mean, is the Secret Service going to accompany him to jail? I think they'll make the argument they have to. And will he be, I mean, they might make the argument, oh, you can't put him in there. You have to put him under like house arrest. That may be what he gets away with. I mean, meanwhile, he's in some mansion doing whatever he pleases anyway. And, you know, probably going to cheat on that. They shouldn't allow that. They should put him in jail and just leave him in there. And yeah, if the SS wants to hang out with him, I suppose they could leave them in there, but they should be in jail.
I think what they're likely to do is make him leave the courtroom and go sit in another room where they can't hear him, where he can see the proceedings and everything. I think that might be something they will do.
Oh, like they did with that guy who mowed down all those people in the Midwest.
Yes.
And he was disruptive through the whole damn thing. And they, okay, that's a possibility.
Yep.
That's a possibility where he could see the and hear the proceedings, and he would be off over there.
Yeah, he could not disrupt them, so.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how that works out. That would be an interesting idea. On the other hand, you still have to punish him for doing stuff, and I wish they would send him to jail. Well, I want them to send him to prison for a long time for real, but, you know, yeah. Okay, that could be interesting. One thing, though, if he is sentenced to jail for a few days, will he have to wear a jail uniform? That would be very interesting. Oh, the photographs of that. This could really be wild stuff. I want to see photographs of Trump in an orange jumpsuit or something or whatever New York jail short-term prisoners are forced to wear. I want to see him in that. I want to see him in cuffs and wearing a prison jumpsuit. This would, of course, be another first for an ex-president of the United States. Yeah, Trump's doing a lot of those. In the past fortnight, Trump has issued an order to the House Republicans to not compromise and pass a bill from the Senate that would send a bill to Biden for his signature with regard to immigration. Now, you know, the plan is to campaign against Biden over the mess that immigration has been in this country for more than 30 years and blame it all on Biden in order to get votes in the upcoming election. And this bill is designed to fix some of that mess. Oh, God, you know, this is terrible stuff. I mean, I hope people see through this, that, yeah, there's a problem, and they're trying to fix it, but this idiot is preventing that from happening, and these other Republicans are also responsible for what happens. Yeah, they have responsibility, too. Trump really is a flawed politician. An intelligent politician would maybe try something this outrageous, but he'd find ways to hide that he was doing it, not flagrantly bellow that he will be the source of the problem. So this is because Trump thinks that he's got these idiot MAGA followers who don't care what he does but follow him blindly, and he can do anything. And his thing in the 2016 election was he could stand on Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody in front of everybody and nothing would happen to him. And he really, really thinks that. It isn't figurative. He thinks that. This is part of why he wants to have the courts rule that because he used to be president, he can't be prosecuted for anything. Not only, I think part of it is he wants to not be prosecuted not only for whatever he did while president, whatever crimes he committed then, but also whatever crimes he committed after being president and maybe even before being president. Jesus Christ. Anyway, an intelligent politician would not be this flagrant about it. He would find a way to have some way of denying it. Plausible deniability. Trump isn't sophisticated enough to figure that kind of thing out. Trump and other Republicans also want the economy to tank before the election so that Trump can blame that on Biden. However, the economy isn't going along with that. The economy is booming. It's doing very well. Jobs are up. The market, which a lot of people pay attention to, is up, and the economy is recovering. The inflation is being tamped down now. A lot of what we see that is being called inflation is just various businesses jacking up their prices because they can and blaming it on inflation. This is very improper behavior on the part of those businesses. Prices ought to come down. But I guess people just go along with this kind of thing. In any event, the economy is going along like this. I have seen one of the attack ads against another Democratic politician on TV, and they say right there, yes, and this guy is with Biden, and they use Biden against all of the Democrats. And yes, and therefore this other politician, who I think he's running for Congress, this other politician is also responsible for the economy going so badly. Well, it's not going badly. They don't pay attention to that. They don't care that it's very obvious that they are lying sacks of excrement. They just say this stuff because it sounds good, and they know that if they tell a lie enough times, people will believe it. Thank you, Joseph Goebbels, for outlining that for all of us. And so this is just awful stuff. Trump is a traitor. And he should be tried for that at some point. What he's done is he's shown complete contempt for democracy. He's shown contempt for all laws. And he just wants his way. And, oh, boy, I sure as hell hope that the Republicans are unable to rig enough elections to get him elected this time, because it's going to be terrible if he gets in. It's going to be awful. What does one do when you have an impossible president who's cheated to get into office and promises retribution and revenge on people if he gets the power? What do you do about that?
Uh-huh.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is back of the book. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and I'm R. Paul Martin.
You know, R. Paul, 2 years ago, there was a big volcanic explosion. I think it was January 2022. And I was looking at an article. This was in the Tonga Hunga Haatpai, I think that's how you say it. Anyway, the Tonga volcano erupted, and it was a tremendous eruption. And there was some question as to how much it would affect the climate, the worldwide climate. Well, I was looking on NASA's Earth Observatory website at this article, Five Factors to Explain the Record Heat in 2023. This was posted on January 13, 2024. And I'd like to just go over the five factors, one of which is that volcano. Factor one, 100 plus years of burning fossil fuels, coal, gas, oil, leads to more greenhouse gases like water vapor, carbon dioxide, and methane, which, quote, act like a blanket trapping heat around the planet, unquote. More fossil fuels makes more greenhouse gases, makes a thicker, warmer blanket effect. So we know that definitely has been happening for decades. So that's factor one. Factor two, carbon dioxide levels have been rising since 1958. In May 2023, CO2 levels peaked at 428 parts per million. I remember when they announced that. That was like, oh, my God.
Yes, that was that's a very terrible. Serious number to come out.
Yeah, and that was recorded by the Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii. So that's, you know, you can't get away from these factors or the combination of thereof. Factor three, El Niño's Southern Oscillation. The Southern Oscillation is a system which naturally occurs in the tropical Pacific, and trade winds are weakened and sea temperature goes up when it's an El Niño, Southern Oscillation. Before 2023, we had 3 years of La Niña. I think El Niño is little boy and La Niña is little girl, I think. Or little child. And we had 3 years of La Niña, which has the opposite cooling effect. So we had 3 years of the cooling effect, which did cool global temperatures somewhat. But then this El Niño went kapow. And it really heated up the Pacific. Factor four, the elimination of aerosols. Ooh, that was like sort of a bit of a surprise. The elimination of aerosol use, certain aerosols slowed temperature rise, Well, at the same time, we're destroying the ozone layer, or as they like to call it, Earth's sunscreen.
Yeah, that
was bad.
Yeah, that was those chlorofluorocarbons. Mm-hmm. If the scientists had not been listened to, and they had been able, the business had been able to keep using those things, somewhere around now we would be in a situation where food would be rare, because the plants would have been destroyed by the ultraviolet blasting in.
Yes, and it turns out some aerosols will reflect the sunlight away and some will help trap the heat. So in this instance, it's good that we stopped doing that, and that was a global effort. It shows you it can be done. The effect of this prior aerosol problem slowed global temperature, but just a little bit. Just a little bit slowed the rise. So that's a factor, but it's a minor one. Factor 5, the eruption of the Tonga volcano, January 2022. A quote from the website says, "It did not substantially add to the record heat," unquote. It released aerosols and water vapor, but basically they kind of canceled out each other's effects. At least that's what they're thinking at this point in January 2024. The volcano blasted water vapor from the Pacific, which was the equivalent of 58,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools, and it shot up through the stratosphere, and from the graphic they had on the website page, it looked like it went up into the mesosphere. So that's like... What is that? Is that like Pacific Ocean in space?
Well, so not quite space, I don't think. Although some of it would have gotten past the Kármán line, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But no, it would be in the upper atmosphere. And now you have some other things happening, because a lot of water vapor also has a greenhouse effect.
Yes, absolutely. It's one of the biggies. So I'm glad I read this article online, because it sort of put it all in perspective. They don't think that there will be a long-term climate change from that eruption, but it definitely had an impact when it happened. The one that had the bigger global impact was, Krakatoa? Is that how you say it?
Krakatoa? Oh, yeah.
Yes. Which, that was in 1883, and that changed weather. Yes, that had a big impact globally on growing food, winters.
Well, there was a bigger one in 1815 in that area, and that gave rise to the 1816 summer without a summer. And they had snow in some places in summertime because of the cover from all the debris that was shot into the atmosphere. And for some years after that, they had some amazing sunsets, and some artists were thought to have been very influenced by the looks of those sunsets.
Yes. So definitely the volcano is one of the 5 factors that explains what the hell happened last year. And I will point out that we are still in the El Nino phase. You can have El Nino, La Nina, and neutral. And we are still in the El Nino phase, and this is affecting our winter temperatures right now here in North America. These sort of extremely warm ones we've been having, with the occasional blast of Arctic air thrown in. So, and this is going to continue on for the next few months at least. So hang on to your hats, folks.
Yeah, 2023 was very warm. Last month, which ended only a couple of days ago, was a very warm January also. And, oh boy, that was full of above average days, sometimes significantly above average. It's getting to be 60 degrees in January. Now, we used to have what would be called a midwinter thaw now and again. And I don't know if those went back centuries or anything, but I know that we started to get those in the 60s. We would get a midwinter thaw, and you would get sometimes a few days, sometimes a week or two, of where it was spring-like weather. Well, we didn't get exactly that this time because we didn't have any really cold weather to thaw out of. It used to be you would get these days and it would be cold days and there'd be snow on the ground and then bang, the snow would melt, everything was nice and everybody remark about it. This time we have temperatures that might have been a midwinter thaw in the past, but there was no thaw to happen. Remember, we went over 700 odd days without measurable snowfall in New York City, and then we got a tiny amount of snow, and that's been it. I predict we are not going to get any more snow this year. So January of 2024 continued in the same vein as all of 2023 was, where it was warmer, significantly warmer than usual. And we'll see what February does, but it seems to be a bit of a pattern here. And is this our new climate? It's predicted that the climate for New York City will eventually be very similar to the climate of Miami in the 20th century. And that makes for some very warm weather. And speaking about all of this stuff, midwinter is tomorrow. Now, we entered the midwinter subseason a few hours after our last program on January 20th. But the exact minute of midwinter will be tomorrow morning, February 4th, that's Sunday morning at February 4th at 6:49 a.m. And after that, we're headed for spring. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. We have a segment we do here and there on Back of the Book, and we call this segment People Stink. And the People Stink segment, this program, is about the Jackie Robinson statue. Yeah, they cut that Jackie Robinson bronze statue off at the ankles and stole it in the middle of the night from a Wichita, Kansas park on Thursday morning, January 25th. The statue had been installed in the park with a big ceremony in April 2021. Jackie Robinson, of course, broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball when he put on a Brooklyn Dodgers uniform and took the field on April 15th, 1947. After getting honorably discharged from the Army after World War II, where he had been court-martialed for refusing to sit at the back of a segregated Army bus, Robinson had played as a star infielder for 2 years for the Negro League's Kansas City Monarchs. He won Rookie of the Year in 1947 from the Major Leagues as a Dodger, and he led the Major League in stolen bases during his rookie season. So, wowee, he was a very big deal, very good player. And, of course, that's what you're going to do. You don't want to, pick somebody who's mediocre or anything. You're going to say, who's the best guy we can grab and put him on our team? Also, as a representative of black people, and let's face it, that's how that works. You have somebody who isn't seen too much for a reason, and you put the guy in there, you want him to be really good. And he did make the promise that he would not get angry. He would hold his temper because it was obvious he was going to be harassed, bothered, all sorts of things were going to happen, And what he had to do was remain calm and present the world with this good demeanor at all times. And, yeah, it would have been quite the sacrifice to not belt people or at least scream back at idiots. And so he did that. He was able to hold his temper when people said vicious, bad things and would discriminate against him and stuff like that. And he would play very, very well, and he would not get into fights with people over what they said to him. And they said a lot to him. So he did very well on that, and wow, that was something. And that certainly did help the civil rights movement way back then. I guess it was an incipient civil rights movement, you could call it, although the civil rights movement really starts much earlier than that. But the civil rights movement after World War II, which really took off, yeah, he was a significant part of that. Anyway, so they cut the statue off at the ankles, and rewards were offered for information about the thieves who stole the statue. And another reward was posted for the return of the statue. And Pickles and I had thought that it was a theft by people who wanted to melt down the statue to recover the bronze and sell it. This sort of thing has been happening. You can't put up a bronze plaque anymore. It used to be you could put a bronze plaque that saying whatever. Those get stolen like crazy. In fact, we know of a particular Brooklyn bronze plaque. I forget exact. It was something or other about Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and it was erected, I think, in World War II, and it was attached to a flagpole. And one day, it wasn't there anymore. So you could figure somebody just broke it out and took it away. And other bronze plaques have had that happen, because a bronze plaque is not that gigantic, and it's fairly easy to carry. And I remember some scumbags did that with a World War I memorial. And this is a memorial to people who died fighting for America and the world in World War I. And these scumbags, it was in a park in Brooklyn, and in the middle of the night, these scumbags went there, managed to use tools to break it away from its attachments to concrete, and they dragged it off, and it was cut up and melted down. And I thought those people should have gotten like life in prison or been charged with some really, really serious crime. Charged them with treason, for Christ's sakes. I don't know. But I thought they should have gotten very, very serious jail time for that. And they caught them. But I think they only got, like, you know, an ordinary theft thing instead of saying, you know, this is something very serious. When you attack the monuments that we have, you're attacking the entire culture. And do we want to defend the culture? Or do we want to say any scumbag can do what they want with it? Well, so that's what we thought had gone on here. However, unfortunately, that reward for returning it can never be collected now, because pieces of the statue were discovered when the Wichita Fire Department responded to a call this past Tuesday about a trash can on fire in another park. There they found some pieces of the broken up Jackie Robinson statue amid the various things that had been burning. So now it's firmly believed that this wasn't a theft by thieves who wanted to make money from selling the raw bronze. It looks more like a hate crime. Meanwhile, a new statue is going to be made and placed in that park. Donations have been pouring in to a fund to replace that statue, and they should easily get enough money to replace it. Major League Baseball is contributing to the fund, and they can certainly afford it, as well as a lot of ordinary people who are outraged by this hateful act. So, yeah, you know, I guess in a way, Jackie Robinson is still outlining the need for racial equality and fighting the hate.
You know, when my parents were kids, Jackie Robinson played for the Montreal Royals. And so they remember him. And my mom remembers, I don't know if she actually saw his family, but they lived basically in the same part of on the island of Montreal where my mom was living. My dad was out in the East End, the big French part of the city. But he used to go to the Royals games, so when he could, so when his big brothers would take him.
So as a kid, he got to see Jackie Robinson
I think,
play.
I believe so, yeah. If he didn't, then his older brothers did, so. And unfortunately, there was good stuff and there was bad stuff with him playing on the team. And was that the farm team for the Dodgers? Because he went from the Royals to the Brooklyn Dodgers. So.
Ah.
Yeah.
Well, I know he was with the Monarchs in Kansas. That's why they have the statue there. And, okay, I don't remember if he went directly from Kansas or directly from the Montreal farm team. But, yeah, one of those.
Anyway, that's just a little thing from my family.
And I will note that Kansas was a battleground state that Biden won in the 2020 election. So, you know, there are a whole bunch of MAGAites there. It was one of those states that has it so that the electoral votes are split. It isn't a winner-take-all thing. So Trump got some electoral votes from there, and Biden got some. So you got plenty of MAGAites in Kansas, all right. The R111T, quote, gangway, unquote, subway trains have rolled into the system this week. We've talked about this in the past. They're a bad idea. One of these trains ran on the C line the other day, and a second one is scheduled to join it on that line soon. The gangway cars, trains, are the ones where they don't have doors between the cars. They have these articulated sections, which you can see on some buses. On some buses, they have basically two parts of the bus, and there's an accordion-type thing between them, and you can walk from one end to the other of this big bus. And now they're doing that with the trains. Oh, this is a very bad idea. So they opened this the other day. They had the inaugural ride of that train. Politicians naturally were all over it. And Governor Hochul showed that she doesn't ride the New York City subways by her remarks. She was talking about the advantages of this and, if you see somebody who's interesting, you can get up and go over and talk to them or walk, you know, get up away from somebody who's next to you. And if you see some interesting-looking stranger, you can go sit down next to them. By the way, there are fewer seats on these cars. You know, that kind of behavior will be mostly the behavior of horny men who want to make unwanted advances to other people. That's what that's going to be about. God, I want to go talk to that stranger over there. Yeah, the guy who's checking how many rounds are in his magazine before he shoves it back into his gun. When people start smoking stinky grass, and grass these days just stinks. When the people start smoking grass in one car, they'll stink up an entire train now. And this is the kind of thing you're going to get. And stinky people won't just stink up one car. They also will stink up an entire train. There will be no escaping the stench of marijuana and people who haven't bathed in a long time in some cases, I know of one case where basically a guy turned the wrecked trench coat he always wore into sort of his bathroom. And, oh, man, everybody used to just, you know, see him coming and, You would inhale sharply and hold your breath and close your eyes and wait for him to get past. People who didn't know what was coming would start going, ah, yeah, that. Also, I remember one time I was on a rush hour train and it was crowded and I looked through the door and the next car is pretty much empty. Usually that means it's a car that's something's wrong with it and they've blocked it off. But I could see there was somebody in there, so I said, let me try that, and I can get a seat, because there were plenty of seats. There were like two guys in there. So I open the door, I walk in, and I get a few feet in, and whoa! These two guys, they weren't sitting on seats. They were laying down, sleeping, and they stank so badly that it was just impossible to stay in that car. And I do not have a sensitive nose. I mean, Pickles of the North has to smell things for us because I would walk into some place that has a burning tires in it and not notice. But this stink was enough to make me go back to the crowded train car I was in. And that's what happens. Also, gangs and just kids during the time when they're out in the subways will make a point of riding in that articulated part of the train. So people will not be able to go from car to car anyway, unless they want to, you know, I don't know, pay a toll or have a fight with a gang or a bunch of kids. And of course, this is all just basically dangerous. Not only can't you run to another car to escape danger, but when there's a shooting, the bullets can travel through the entire train and have a bigger chance of hitting someone. Usually the bulkhead doors would absorb some of that and confine the field of fire to one car. I remember back in the 70s and 80s, bullet holes in IRT number 2 Redbird trains, the old Redbird. Yeah, those trains, I rode those constantly in the 70s and 80s. The IRT number 2 doors between cars, they would frequently have bullet holes in them. So, oh boy, somebody's shooting at somebody else and, you know, somebody who's, what is it, like 200 feet away and in another car is going to get hit by a bullet because it doesn't get stopped by a door.
And I would like to point out that as being reported on the radio and other places, oh, these are the first such type cars being used in North America. Well, they're not. They've been in service in Montreal for the past several years, and I've got to say that Montreal is a city of it's got a bit over a million people at this point, but not much. It's a smaller city, less crowding, and all the experiences I've had on the train have just been non-experiences, but it was like that before when they had other kind of metro cars there. That's what they're called in Montreal Metro, after the metro in France. So it's okay for that city. I don't think it's okay for this city, though.
Well, I think we're probably going to get some stories about this, and it's entirely possible that these two trains, these two R111T gangway trains, are going to be the only two that ever enter the New York City system. And, oh boy, we're probably going to hear some very bad stories regarding these stupid trains in the future.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
Oh, chugga chugga, it's the Back of the Book WBAI pitching train. Yes, it's going right over here. It's pulling into the Back of the Book station. And what this is we need to beg you for money. Yes, WBAI is listener-sponsored non-commercial radio, and it's not just a slogan. It's an actual declaration of sponsorship. Our sponsorship comes overwhelmingly from you, the listeners. And the thing we need to do is ask you to support the radio station. Because if you don't, we're going to go away. We don't accept ads. We don't sell cars on the air. We aren't selling you land in Florida and stuff like that. What we do is we ask you to support us. That's the concept of listener-sponsored radio. And so we ask you, our listeners, to please call 1-212-209-2950, and when they pick up at the call center, say, you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And when you do that, they will ask you for a credit card or debit card number, and they will also ask you how much you want to donate on a monthly basis. And you'll become a BAI buddy. That's the name we have for sustaining memberships. By becoming a BAI buddy, you will become a member of WBAI, and your credit card or debit card will be charged once a month. You get to determine what day of the month you will be charged. Your card will be charged. And that way, you can donate to WBAI. You can donate $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month or more if you can afford it. And I think that you don't have to have it precisely in there. I think you can have it $10 and up. You pick exactly how much you want to do. If you can do more than $10 but you can't do $15, pick something in between there that you can do and say, I want to do that much money per month. So that's what we need you to call up and do. It's 1-212-209-2950. And, you know, you'll be getting programming that is, well, you get this programming. We do all sorts of things here. We are going to be doing a science segment on the next program that will be interesting, I hope. I hope some of this program has been interesting, too. But we need to hear from you no matter what. Again, 1-212-209-2950. We need to hear from some listeners, and we'll probably be making some announcements about that in the next week or two. And we need to hear from you. Please, please call 1-212-209-2950 and become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. Be sure to mention Back of the Book. And so what happens is you call that number, and if you want to make a one-time donation, by the way, you can do that too. And I think a one-time donation is $10 and up. And so you can make a one-time donation. You say, I don't want to do it on a monthly basis, but I'll do it one time. That's okay. You still dial 1-212-209-2950 and say you want to make a one-time donation in the name of Back of the Book. So please, please give the call center a call at that number now. 1-212-209-2950. We really, really do need to hear from you over there. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Yes, we need to hear from you. 1-212-209-2950. And I'll note again, there are still people who are pitching the idea of getting rid of all the overnight programs. If you want any of the overnight programs to survive, you're probably going to have to become a BAI buddy and show management that we have listeners. Again, 1-212-209-2950. Please call that number now and say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book, or make a one-time donation. And we'll thank you if you do. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. Coming up next is...
Apparently a special is on instead of Dave Kenny's Everything Old is New Again.
Yes, again. Certainly fitting because we're recording this on Groundhog Day. All right, we should be back here next week. And meanwhile, it's going to warm up again for a little bit, and enjoy it while you can. You might as well enjoy it. Have what fun you can in the midwinter weather that's kind of not so wintry. And above all, remember what that hoping to completely avoid these gangway cars for the rest of his life, Dormouse said.
Well, This is Mike Sargent with This Day in Racial Injustice. On this day, February 3rd, in 1948, a black woman, Rosa Lee Ingram, and her children, Wallace, 17, and Sammy Lee, 14 years old, were sentenced to death for defending themselves. The three were convicted by an all-white jury in a one-day trial in Ellaville, Georgia. The family members were sentenced to death by electric chair for killing an armed white man in self-defense after he violently assaulted and threatened them. The attack occurred on November 4, 1947, when John Stratford, a white landowner armed with a shotgun and a pocket knife, attacked Miss Ingram, a widow who worked as a sharecropper on his farm near Ellaville, Georgia. Testimony later revealed that Stratford hit Ingram in the head with the butt of his rifle while threatening to sexually assault her and shoot her. Rosalie Ingram's sons rushed to their mother's aid when they heard her screaming as she was being attacked. One son struck Stratford with a farm tool, killing him. Ingram and her sons were arrested soon after Stratford was found dead. Even though the local sheriff admitted that the sons acted in defense of their mother, all three were sentenced to death by electrocution, and their execution was scheduled for February 27th. Though Wallace and Sammy Lee Ingram were both minors, they were eligible for execution under the law at the time. The U.S. Supreme Court didn't ban the execution of children until 2005. After a post-trial motion and a pressure from civil rights activists, the trial judge changed the Ingram sentences to life imprisonment. Then, in July 1948, the Georgia Supreme Court affirmed their convictions and life sentences. Though Rosalie Ingram and her sons no longer had death sentences, they were sent to the state penitentiary and were each forced to serve more than a decade in prison for daring to defend themselves against a violent armed assault by a white man. They were not released on parole till 1959. This has been This Day, February 3rd, in Racial Justice from the Equal Justice Initiative, and this is listener-sponsored WBAI New York.
Funny, this radio hasn't been working very well the past 2 days.
Peter, where do you live?
I'm glad you asked me.
It's a secret place. Please tell me.
All right, I tell you.
All Mixed Up with Peter Beauchamp.
When?
Saturday afternoon here on WBAI.
That should be time for our favorite program. Yes, just about time.
What would you do if I went off the air?
We'd kill ourselves!
This is Wayne Kramer from the MC5. Nobody kicks out the jams like WBAI New York.